Are you struggling with a bad habit that you desperately would like to overcome? Marvin Moore shares some thoughts you may find helpful. Your narrator is Calvin Follett. Tracy can't stay out of stores. 3 to 4 times a week, she's at the shopping mall. She's maxed out 2 credit cards and is loading up on a 3rd. I'm never happier than when I'm shopping, she says. Tracy is a shopping addict. Delbert's favorite pastime is sports. He turns the TV to the sports channel the moment he gets home in the evening. And in the morning, he catches up on the sports news from the night before. He subscribes to 6 sports magazines and often drives several hundred miles to attend sporting events. He spends several $1,000s a year on sports. The thrill of the competition relieves my anxiety, he says. Delbert is addicted to the excitement of sports. Pastor Gerald Whitehead is a favorite with his parishioners. Whatever the need, when they call, he's there to help. Recently, he signed up for a cell phone so that he could be more accessible. I love helping people, Gerald says. I can forget about my own problems when I'm helping others with theirs. Gerald doesn't realize that he's addicted to caretaking. While each of the above activities is normal in itself, if you could talk to these people, you'd soon realize that something is not quite right. There's a drivenness to their activities that consumes their every waking moment. The word for it is obsession. When the opportunity to engage in their favorite activity comes around, they can't say no. It sucks them in like a whirlpool. This obsessive, compulsive thinking and behaving lies in the foundation of all addiction. The question is, how can Tracy, Delbert, and Gerald get out of this nightmare? How can you get out of yours? Number 1, recognize the problem. The first step is to recognize that you have a problem. We tend to deny that anything is wrong. We enjoy the addictive behavior, and we don't want to give it up. Often, in fact, we're terrified of giving it up. But until we acknowledge the problem, it will keep sucking us in deeper and deeper and closer to destruction. How can you acknowledge the problem when you're in the middle of a denial? God will help you to do that. He's promised to convict you of sin and guide you into all truth, John 16 verses 8 and 13. And that includes the truth about yourself. So when you recognize one of those moments in your life, just say, God, if you're trying to tell me something about myself, lead me into the willingness to accept the truth. You may be able to stop the destructive behavior at that point, but you may have to hit bottom first. Hitting bottom means reaching a crisis, such as a health problem, a loss of job, or the prospect of divorce, that forces you to face your addiction honestly. The question you must ask yourself is, how bad am I going to let it get before I finally admit the truth about my life? That's why asking God to lead you out of denial is so important. He can help you hit bottom before the consequences become catastrophic. Number 2, acknowledge your powerlessness. Step 1 of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous says, we admitted that we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. This truth applies to all addiction. The emotions driving our addiction are so powerful that we're incapable of shutting them off in our own strength. Alcoholics Anonymous says it well. We were the victims of a mental obsession so subtly powerful that no amount of human power could break it. Number 3, seek God's help. To break out of our obsession, we need help. And 2 kinds of help are available. The most important is God's help. People with experience in Alcoholics Anonymous say, we have warped our minds into such an obsession for destructive drinking, fill in your own addictive behavior here, that only an act of providence can remove it from us. And providence, of course, means God. So I suggest saying this prayer, God, I'm powerless over this obsession, and name it. Please remove the desire for it and give me instead a desire for what's right. From personal experience, I can assure you that God will do that. Most of the time, He doesn't remove the desire instantly. But if you keep asking Him for help, and if you cooperate with Him in other ways, you will discover that, as time goes by, the obsession gets weaker and weaker. Number 4, seek help from others. The other source of help is people who've struggled successfully with addiction. 12-step meetings are extremely helpful in this regard, especially if you can find a group that deals with the same issue you're struggling with. Make a commitment to attend regularly for a period of years, perhaps the rest of your life. If this sounds too difficult, remember that you'll make friends that you'll cherish the rest of your life, too. It's also a good idea to get what AA calls a sponsor. He or she should be someone with whom you can be totally honest. Often, this will be someone you meet in the group that you attend. If your sponsor has had experience with the 12 steps, ask him or her to guide you in working them through. These steps are entirely biblical, and they have helped millions of people to break free of addiction. Number 5. Offer praise and thanksgiving. One of the most powerful tools for conquering addiction is praise and thanksgiving. I recommend the following prayers. Thank you, God, for your power that is breaking the hold this addiction has had over my life. I praise you, Jesus, for dying on the cross so that I can be forgiven for the times I've yielded to this addiction. And God, I thank you for accepting me right where I am. The more you thank God for the victory, even before you've achieved it, the more you are strengthening your faith. And the stranglehold this addiction has had over your life will be broken. I want to assure you that regardless of the nature of your addiction, there is a way out. Hold on to that belief and then go and search for the answer. God will guide you, often through people. You can be free. Some people object that the concept of addiction denies the biblical teaching about sin. Sin implies a moral flaw, they say, whereas addiction suggests a disease of the mind and or body that is free of moral implications. Some people claim to be addicts to excuse their sin. While we must never excuse sin, sometimes we are so oppressed with guilt for our shortcomings that the guilt itself gets in the way of our effort to overcome. Temporarily viewing the problem apart from its moral implications can help to break the obsessive guilt. This can be an aid to recovery, which is the same thing as victory over sin. However, those who are serious about recovery from addiction will admit the moral implications of their behavior. One of the major objectives to the 12 steps is to help addicts take responsibility for the damage their addiction has caused themselves and others. Furthermore, the Bible sometimes refers to sin as a disease. Speaking of the sin of Israel, Isaiah said, "Your whole head is injured, your whole heart afflicted. From the sole of your foot to the top of your head, there is no soundness, only wounds and welts and open sores." Isaiah 1 verse 5. And number 6, the New Testament Greek word for salvation also means healing. So when you are saved from sin, you are healed of it.